The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to my program here on The Shepherd. I have as my guest today, Sarah Grafton. Sarah is a financial advisor. She is a motivational speaker and author. We're going to be talking about her new book coming up in a bit. And a community activist. And this is really an amazing stat right here. Sarah was named to the Orlando Business Journal's 40 Under 40 at age 29. So that is nothing to me less than a testimony to the effectiveness of your life and just the favor that God has given you in this community. Orlando's a large community, and to be listed as the 40 under 40 is in itself an achievement, and I do commend you for that. So, Sarah Grafton, welcome to my program.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to be here, and I'm so thankful for all that you do in this community.
Well, thanks. It is a privilege to get to talk to people like you. People, in our show open, we talk about people who are newsmakers, people who are doing things to advance the glory of God and the gospel of Jesus. I mean, that's really what we are all about. And we do that through programs like my own program, a talk show. We have teaching that goes on throughout the day, but it's all aimed at helping people make a difference in their lives and to give God glory for the life, this wonderful life that he has given us. And he's given something to you very special as well. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're not from Orlando originally.
Sure. So my family grew up in New Jersey. Most people, no one listening will believe this, but I grew up on a 14-acre farm.
In New Jersey. Wow.
You know, that one exit. with horses, chickens, like you name it. We just had a completely different lifestyle than we have here in Winter Park, Orlando.
So. Yeah. Now, your family, 14 acres, what did your family do besides that? That's not a farm, like a production farm, but you had all of the trappings of a wonderful farm life.
Yes, my mom and dad just kind of fell into it. My dad was still a financial advisor back then, but he'd come home and he would take the horses out, he'd feed the chickens. You know, we'd wake up early in the morning and that would be a treat to go feed the chickens with my dad. So I don't think anybody in Orlando knows that about me.
So you heard it here first. That is a great story. Mm-hmm. I grew up with a similar background, living on the outskirts of the city in which we were raised, and we had chickens. We didn't have horses per se. We had ponies that my grandfather let out a barn that he had for somebody to come, and so he basically had ponies there, and they're, you know, not horses, but close. and we had pigs. Did you have pigs?
No,
on yours?
We didn't have any pigs. Oh. But I had a pony named Timmy.
Oh, you did. So did you ever think, I mean, you probably at that age, you probably thought, this is farm life, right?
It is. And honestly, some of my best moments, like those moments where you feel like the safest and loved, like happened on that farm. I used to have like this beautiful swing set that my dad built for me on a huge tree that when you swung on it, you could see the city and you could see the hills. And like when I'm thinking of a peaceful moment, like that is a peaceful moment for me.
Now, when you say see the city, are you talking about like New York?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about like a little town nearby.
Okay, so you were in rural New Jersey.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Not up next to Manhattan.
No.
Yeah. So now that you're here, which of the two areas of the country do you prefer?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I could ever go back to New Jersey. My blood is warm. I can't stay there very often in the winter, but I love going back and visiting family. My parents actually have a house in Maine. We spend summers up there. So I love going up to Maine and getting that weather where you can be on the beach during the day and in a sweater at night.
Mm-hmm. So. That's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot of time in Florida in the wintertime here. Not right now, though.
No.
wouldn't recommend it right now. Yeah, that's really great. Well, Sarah, how did you come to know the Lord?
So I have an interesting story. I have known the Lord my whole life. You know, I grew up, my mom was Catholic, my dad was Presbyterian. I went to church on Sundays. I went to Bible studies.
You would have gone to the Presbyterian church?
Yes, I went to the Presbyterian church. And then my parents were divorced when I was 12 years old.
Mm.
And it was a difficult time for me, but I was also growing in my faith. I think I turned to the Lord to kind of guide me through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a local high school here, and they had Young Life and they had FCA. And I would go to those on my lunch breaks. And I went to a few camps with Young Life. And I just really grew in my relationship with the Lord. And my favorite part about my testimony is that I brought my mom to know Jesus more.
Wonderful.
Through the divorce. And so, while she had always been a Catholic and always known of God and knew God loved her, she never really had a personal relationship with God. So that is, you know, one of my favorite things about my testimony, that through it, my family became closer to God.
You know, a lot of our listeners may not have had children that were part of clubs like what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But these two in particular have been around a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very effective, aren't they, on that campus?
They are. So just having a place to go and talk about what you're going through, hearing about other people's testimonies. And a lot of them are run by, you know, people in their 20s and 30s who the children can relate to and really, I don't know, just benefit from a positive role and a relationship in their life. So it was great to be a part of those. And I ended up participating and becoming a leader in FCA on the Lake Highland campus here in Orlando, and then doing Young Life outside of that and going to Windy Gap and a few other of the camps.
So by the time you got to school, high school, you were down in Florida then?
Yes.
And now you mentioned FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Were you an athlete there as well?
I was. So I started as a basketball player, played basketball for 14 years.
Oh, wow.
I played varsity. That's actually why I went to Lake Highland. I was set to go to Winter Park High School, and they asked me to come over there. And then I ended up transitioning my junior year. I played softball, track, cross country, and then I finished out the year playing basketball my junior year. But I loved it. I love playing sports, and now I'm a mom of three, and all three are boys, so what better?
Right. I mean, you probably are out schooling the boys.
Yes. And that's a way for me to connect with my kids.
Yeah. That's really wonderful. And again, going back to FCA, that is an organization that I've been very involved with up in Gainesville and somewhat down here now in Orlando as well. And it is one that I just have the highest, really the highest respect for, how they manage everything they do on the campuses, in the communities in which they serve. And they have these huddles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were part of, the school huddle.
Yes, and I think it's so important at that age to have this opportunity, because you are making decisions that are going to affect the rest of your life. You're choosing where you're going to go to college. You're choosing where you're going to, you know, you're setting up for the rest of your life and really starting to make some independent decisions. And I think having a faith during that is so important.
You know, you talk about the faith that you grew in, and it actually went beyond you and then impacting your mom and all of that. When you came to that point of transition yourself in your own heart, where now it wasn't something that you were just hearing about from a Sunday school lesson or a Sunday night service or a Sunday morning service, this is becoming real to you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about those early times where that impact really spoke to your heart about the Lord?
Sure. So I always felt called to serve, which I know that I wasn't in a position. So many families are in positions of need, and I was going through something that 50% of Americans are now going through with their parents getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
But I always felt called to help my neighbor. And so my entire life, I have been giving back to nonprofits. I remember serving in high school with the children's adoption centers. And I came home one day and I told my mom we had to go adopt these two twins because if not, they were going to be separated.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, from that point on, have always had it on my heart to serve others and put others first. And I don't know, it's just this feeling of grace and love and understanding for mm-hmm. others that you don't have before you have a relationship with God. I don't think that, I talk a little bit about this in the book, but I don't think there's ever a moment where you can truly understand someone's decisions or understand their thought process and be like, oh, okay, I'm okay with you hurting me or, you know, going through that or whatever it is that is your hurdle in life. I don't think there's ever this moment of, oh, okay, it's okay that you did that. I think that you need grace. Like there, you have to have grace if you want to move forward and forgive and love. And grace was just a huge part of my life. Like, so I think having a relationship with God and Jesus showed me what grace was.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. We all need grace. You're right. Without it, I referred to this song in an interview a couple of days back, but it was the song by a man named Paul Oakley, who wrote it from England. It was the song, "It's All About You." And really, that's what grace is. It's really all about the Lord. It's we just don't, other than the fact that, as Luther said, our contribution are the nails that we carry around that hung him to the cross. I mean, mm-hmm. our sin is what did that. But apart from that, all of our grace, all of our relationship was given as a gift from our Lord. And I'm so grateful that he did that in your heart. And it's impacted way beyond you. And thankful that it has gone into your family. Did you know back then that you had such an interest in helping people with this financial edge that your dad obviously had?
So it's actually the other way around.
Oh.
I knew that I wanted, we have such a close family, and much like you, we have a huge family here in the Central Florida area. So I have two brothers who also have children, and then I have my mother and father, and I grew up just maybe a little bit idolizing my dad, going through, watching him wake up at 7 a.m., come home at 7 p.m., serving his clients. He just works so hard for our family. And as a kid, I really, really looked up to him. And then when I was in college, I decided I wanted to work with him. So he was like, Sarah, take what you love, do what you love, and let's focus on your strengths. And, you know, he always says this, which he will laugh at if he hears this interview. He was like, it was like putting a square peg in a round hole, or like figuring out. He wanted to find out what was going to fit well for me in order to make me successful. So he knew that I loved serving. He knew that I was great with people. Like I love making people feel safe and secure mm-hmm. with their investments. I love making them feel taken care of. So he put me on that side of things. I went and got all my licenses, but then I really do all of our business development. I'm out in the community serving every day. They kick me out of the office. And then my brother Will does, he's a CFP.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the office all day. And my
certified financial planner.
Yes.
I even know what that is, believe it or not. It's hard to believe.
Yes. And then my little brother Dex, which he hates that I call him my little brother. He's only a few years younger than me, but to me, he's the baby of the family. He also is in the office. He kind of manages our team and does our products and research. And so they're both in the office all day. My dad is semi-retired. Mm-hmm. He's our consultant, and our clients will never let him go. But he loves what he does. I don't think he could let it go either. Mm-hmm. So my role kind of fell into where I would be most successful based on who I was and their roles as well. So,
you know, it's that old saying that if you like what you're doing, if mm-hmm. you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And that sounds like that fits you.
Yes. And believe it or not, it's been the best thing for us because our clients are also invested in the community. They're invested in giving back. They love that we do that so much mm-hmm. that, you know, that might not be why they come to us. They come to us for good financial advice and for wealth management. But that is also something for them to be proud of, that we're invested in the community, that, you know, we're taking our personal money and putting it back out there, our personal time and our talents, and investing those in the community.
Mm, that's wonderful. My guest today, if you just tuned in, is Sarah Grafton, and she is a financial advisor. And one thing that I did note, and I mentioned this in the introduction, that you also speak. You're a motivational speaker. So how does that fit into what you do?
Sure. So I fell into that a bit. Very early on, some nonprofits asked me to speak about how it was I was young. I was 23 when I became a financial advisor. I was a woman. I was not your typical financial advisor. I was probably one of five women working in the office that I was in at the time that was a financial advisor out of 40, you know. So they asked me to kind of speak about breaking the mold, kind of, and not being afraid to go after things that you like just because maybe you don't fit the typical look of what you, you know, you're doing. So I had a few nonprofits ask me to do that. And then the more hours that I've just given to the community, organizations have asked me to MC at their events. And I do the Peacock Ball for the Winter Park History Museum every year. This year I did the Winter Park Day Nursery, which is a preschool that serves underprivileged children in Winter Park, Florida. And I did the MC there. And I just really love being in front of people, being with people, and hopefully raising money for these nonprofits. So
that's great. And that's a fun way to get that gifting out in there, and you're using it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun to do it. Now, a lot of people don't like to be in front of other people.
Let me tell you, that is a God thing, because my senior year of college, the last class that I had to take was speech, and I was terrified. I would not go up there. I tried to drop out. I tried to ask for to take two courses instead of one course. I did not want to do it. And slowly but surely, after college, just taking these different leadership roles where I had to speak in front of a board or two or three people, became 10 people, became 20 people. And then I think that first initial motivational speaking to the Downtown United Against Poverty was maybe 200 people. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the old saying that I think it's like number three or number four. The fear of death is on the top list. But number one on that list is public speaking.
Yes. I have no problem with that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to joke that my number one fear was dying while I was speaking in public. So that kind of combine one and three or four together. My guest today is Sarah Grafton, and she is a financial advisor in the Central Florida area. We're going to be back with her to find out about what exactly her business does and how that they work in Central Florida, and also the fact that she's written a book. That's very exciting. We're going to hear more about that coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're listening to The Shepherd. Listen, we all know in business nowadays, one of the hardest things to get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, right? Trying to get content, good content at that, always struggling with your phone, never understanding the settings, and then when you finally post the picture or video, it looks terrible. Well, I'm about to let you in on a little secret in how to make this problem simply go away. I'm talking about Boundless Drone Services. Let me tell you, Boundless Drone Services takes away all the stress. Brian and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Or maybe you'd like to do what we did at Mark Radio and have them highlight the wonderful team that you have working for you. At Boundless Drone Services, they really can do it all. Contact them today at 407-601-2438 or go directly to their website at boundlessdroneservices.com to see how they can help you take your business to the next level in marketing. It's always a lot of fun to have new people that I have not met in the studio with me here today, and my guest today qualifies for that. Her name is Sarah Grafton, and Sarah is a financial advisor in Orlando. Tell us a little bit about your business and how it formed and what you do.
Sure. So next year will be 50 years of Grafton Wealth Management, 2022. My dad started the business in 72 in New Jersey. So we moved down the East Coast, and I feel like we have clients now all over the U.S. But we have had most of our clients for over 40 years. We have now five team members. So it's myself, my two brothers, Percy, who we say we adopted. He originally worked in a bank, and we felt like it was important for our clients to have someone represent the bank. And then we have our assistant, Tanya, who truly runs the team. I tell everybody she's the brains behind the team. She makes sure we keep our I's dotted and our T's crossed. And then my father is our consultant, And he loves to say that he is the one who gets to do all the fun things. Now he goes golfing with our clients and spends his day just building those relationships.
And that's really an important thing to do. It really is, not just saying that, because, I mean, he is the face of the company, and it is a true family business. Now, tell me a little bit about what you've seen that's changed. Let's go back to before the 2008, 2009, when the finances seemed to just crash. You know, we've gone through a couple of those cycles in the last 30, 40 years, but that was a big one.
Sure. So 2008 was when I was starting my career. So if you can imagine trying to bring in new clients when that had just happened. But one great thing is our team is very conservative. And so we didn't have a lot of roller coaster clients. You know, we're planning for the long term for clients. We're not really stock pickers or anything like that. So most of our clients are doing great, you know, even through that time, mm-hmm. you know, when others are down a lot, we're not down very much. So we rode through that okay. We also had a little bit of a blessing. We had moved companies in October of 2017. So a lot of our clients were actually in a lot of cash. And I contribute that completely to God because it was just right before everything happened.
And, you know, there's that old saying that when things are low, you buy low. And when things are down, you invest. And that can give you a greater leg for later on.
Mm-hmm. And we truly, I've always loved my family, but I guess I began to appreciate my brothers just watching them do what they do for these clients, making them feel secure and safe and also like they're, you know, prepared mm-hmm. for the future. And so I think, you know, you can go anywhere for financial advice. You see it everywhere now. You're bombarded with it. And
commercials even.
Yes. And mm-hmm. so what I think is different for us is the relationship. We don't have thousands of clients. We don't want thousands of clients. We want to be able to do a great job for you. So, you know, we have a book of about 175 families that we work with. And we, you know, invest in them, not only financially. We, you know, call them on their birthday. We go see their kids graduate. You know, we're part of that family and mm-hmm. we want to be there for the long term. We don't want clients that come and go. So, you know, it's born of having so much pride in the business because my dad started it. But now, you know, we've truly invested our time into it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the biggest problem or the biggest mistake that young families make? And again, I think it's important to say that nothing in this program has been paid for either from Sarah and her organization to us or vice versa. So I just want to make sure that everyone understands that. But I know the kind of advice that you can give in a general way that's mm-hmm, not going right. to be perceived as like leading people or giving people ideas. But
sure.
But from a general standpoint, what mistakes do you see young couples making today?
I think not reaching out and getting advice, feeling like they have to be at a certain level in order to start.
A certain financial level?
Yes, financial level in order to start investing or meeting with an advisor. You know, that's one thing that we've learned being a young team mixed with, you know, someone with experience like my father. There's a lot of young people who are doing incredible things in this community who would be great investments for us to have as clients in the long term, but maybe they're not at a place where they can invest a lot of money right now, but we need to invest in them too. So I think investing in people and investing in their futures is really important. And I think young families need to reach out, especially if you have young children. I started planning for my son's college tuition the week I got back to the office after my maternity leave. I started an account for him. So I think it's really important for you to start those little things. It can be $50 a month in a 529 account for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never too early to start is what I would say.
You know, the thing about gradual saving and the putting even a little bit away in a savings plan or a Roth IRA or whatever, those kinds of investments and all of that. I think the biggest thing that young people, this is what I wish I would have done differently. If I would have seen it back then, that just a little bit, mm-hmm. the cumulative effect that it brings over 20, 30, 40 years.
It's amazing. One of the, I mean, I'm thankful to my father, obviously, for many things. But the first day in the office, I asked him if I had to give to the 401k because I was young. I had just gotten married. I think we had, we weren't pregnant yet, but you know, you're trying to buy a home, you're planning mm-hmm. for all these things. And I'm like, I'm invincible at 23, right? I don't need to invest in a 401k for when I retire. And he was like, nope. He was like, invest in the 401k and do it to the most that the company will match. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And so now it's one of the things I'm most thankful I did.
Yeah, because you just can't imagine. I think mm-hmm. you said it right. I think a lot of young people see themselves as invincible. Mm-hmm. But there was a guy that I prayed with right before he passed away, and I asked him about things in his life, and in particular, his relationship with the Lord and why he had not lived differently, because he said he had wished he had. Mm-hmm. And he made this comment. He said, well, I think the main reason I didn't is that I thought I was going to live forever. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the subtle areas of our brain, we kind of can grab a hold of that as almost a way of life and think, well, I'm going to be around. I'll wait till another day and then start that habit then.
Right. And we see that in so many aspects of our life, right? Like, when am I going to get healthy? Oh, I'll start on Monday.
Yeah, not today.
Yeah, not today. But
right after this big piece of juicy pizza.
And it's very hard to explain that now as a mother to a child. Like, when I'm talking to my sons, so my oldest is named Ryder. When I'm talking to him, I'm like, honey, you need to do this. You don't understand why you're doing it, but it's important for the long run. He's like, oh, I'll do it later. You know, they can't see past today. They truly can't. They're like, oh, and he's just now getting to that age. He's turning 13 this year, where for sports, he actually has to work out and eat right. And so it's awesome to see him planning. I'm watching him work out. I'm watching him do crunches and push-ups. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I'm trying to get this goal. And I'm like, oh, so now you understand. If you put in a little work each day, you'll get to that goal. Mm-hmm.
And it does. It happens. Yeah. And it takes discipline. And I think mm-hmm. that's one of the main things. Discipline never is easy.
Oh, for sure. And this world truly gives you so many distractions. I know we were talking about that earlier, but you know, everyone's offering for you to take advantage of their card, even Apple now, right? Now you can purchase everything from your phone and have an Apple card and pay off the Apple card. And everywhere you go, you can get your furniture and pay off your furniture in 5 years. I can't imagine where someone would be. Walking through the mall, how many times do you say no to getting that store's credit card? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just, it's hard because people are not helping you out in the community.
And a lot of it is just the lack of education about these things. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a class when I was in high school. It was an economics class. And they would have actually taught us back then to avoid debt and what happens when you get into debt and yeah. you become a real slave to that thing. And it's, you know, I heard early on that it's so easy to get into, but so very difficult to get out of.
Right. And I think we can see that almost in our children too, when we're paying for something. Once I didn't have any cash with me, and Ryder said something or Bobby said something like, oh, well, why don't you just put it on a credit card? And I was like, do you know what a credit card is? And nope.
It's a piece of plastic that I can buy things with.
It's just going to let me have whatever I would like.
Yeah. That's exactly the way people look at it. I had a young lady one time. I was paying for something at a store, and this teenager looked, and as I pulled out my card, she goes, wow, I wish I had one of those. Mm-hmm. And she said, if I did, I could buy anything I wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, young lady, you just don't know what you're talking about.
I wish I didn't have one of these.
Yeah, it's right. Well, I think they're wonderful tools. Credit cards mm-hmm. can be wonderful tools if you manage them right, mm-hmm. but they can be real invitations to problems if you don't.
For sure.
And that is something that all you young people out there, just listen up now. Don't get in debt. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest things. Now, what other thoughts come to your mind when you think of trying to help your own kids to make those good daily decisions?
Sure. So I probably when they were 6 or 7 went out and bought little jars. So I had three jars, and anytime that they got money, whether it was a birthday or a gift or even doing some chores around the house, the jars said spend, save, or give. So they had to choose which jar to put it into. And many times, you know, they would be like, I'll put 50% in save and I'll spend 50% of it. But it was really early on teaching them to make the decision of what they were going to do with the money before they just went out and spent it. And I love that a lot of the time that their heartstrings said, oh, I want to put a little bit in give too. So that was nice to teach them about, you know, sharing the money that comes to them.
That's a wonderful idea. A lot of people have used envelopes in a similar way, but however you get around to it, that's the main thing, is doing it. My Sunday school class when I was a kid used to give these little round wooden coins out, and they were called tuits. T-U-I-T is what it was printed on. And I thought, what in the world is that? And they said, well, give these out and then tell people that you're giving them something so that they're going to get a round to it. And I thought that was the corniest thing I'd ever heard, but I've never forgotten it. Getting around to it is a major, major step forward to doing the things that you need to be doing.
That's awesome. I love that story.
It was funny, but I don't know where they got those things, but they were round to it. Oh, my guest today is Sarah Grafton. You know, we're going to talk more in the next segment, our last segment, about the book. But somewhere along the line, I know that as an author, you must have had early ideas to organize thoughts, to organize things that are really important to this whole area. Did you know years before you wrote a book what it was going to be or how it was going to work?
I have told everyone that at 12 years old, I wanted to be an author. I didn't know how it was going to happen. I didn't really plan for it. I didn't do a great job planning. But I would always keep journals. I was always writing. I remember at Maitland Middle School winning like a writing competition and then having to read it. I didn't like the reading it part in front of the school.
But you overcame that. That's right.
I love to write. I love to share my feelings and my experiences and help people through it. Mm-hmm. So I knew pretty early on that I wanted to do something with writing. In fact, when I first went to college, I thought I wanted to be in journalism. And I kind of steered into business instead. But I think I've always wanted to do it. And I was excited that the opportunity came to me.
You know, your family, what did they think about it when you said, I want to write a book on this? What did they think?
Well, I think they were probably excited for me. My mom has always, always said, every time I wrote anything, even my Facebook posts, she would be like, Sarah, I think you need to be writing. I think you need to be an author. Like, she just always felt that I was called to do that. I'm sure that my family was nervous because it is a personal story, and it's a story about divorce, and it's a story about our faith as a family. So I'm sure they're a little nervous to read it, but my parents have read it. My siblings haven't read it yet.
Well, it's out and it's available. And the name of the book is Women Who Shine. And that's a compelling title. I want to hear more about that, how you came to that. It's really exciting to see a young lady like yourself really put we talked about discipline. That's really, it takes discipline to write a book.
Yes, I was you know what? I did a lot of this writing during the COVID pandemic because I wasn't working from the office. So I had a lot more time on my hands after work hours to just kind of sit and type my feelings out. So I really had a lot of time. And then when everything started to become more normal, it got a little harder to have the discipline to sit down and finish and edit and things like that.
What's the hardest part about writing? What was it?
Oh my gosh, you're never happy with the with the final results. I honestly felt like I rewrote it multiple times. I cut and pasted certain parts, you know, from the top to the bottom. And you just wonder, you lived through it. So you know the story. You wonder if it reads the same way.
Did you ever think about what it would be like to have written this book 30 years earlier with no computers, no cutting and pasting?
No, I don't think I could have done.
Isn't that funny? I mean, people either wrote them out by hand,
right,
which is what obviously early writers did, and later with typewriters. But I'm just thinking how much, How much whiteout did they use back in that day?
Oh, my gosh.
or just rip the paper out like we've seen in movies and wad it up and throw it on and start all over again.
Imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Word processing is one of those gifts that I'm not sure. It might be a curse, too. Yeah. But it certainly was a blessing when it comes to starting over again and writing or keeping things. And then, like you said, cutting and pasting, putting these ideas down. It's easier now than ever to do that. And yet a lot of people still, they need one of those wooden round to-its. They need to get to it. My guest is Sarah Grafton. We're going to be back with her one more time. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to The Shepherd. We are back again with Sarah Grafton, and Sarah is one of these young ladies. She is a financial advisor, a speaker, an author, a leader, and a mom with a couple of kids. She's an athlete. You know, I can see why you do as well as you do in your business, because you've had to learn to find pockets of time for all of these things that you do. That's really great. The name of the book is Women Who Shine. And that is a beautiful title. Women Who Shine, who allows the light of God to shine out of their lives into the world. And that's really what we're all called to do in a particular way. You're pointing this book, obviously, or at least about the book. The subject matter is two ladies and in their lives. And so what was the motivation for the title? What was the motivation for thinking that I've got something to say to ladies?
Sure. So I think the idea is it's myself telling my own story and then 29 other women also telling their story of making light in their life, whether it was through a dark situation or a hard time or a hurdle, and truly becoming the light for others. So it may have just been an opportunity for them to share their light. So all of these stories are really incredible. And my personal story is about being a child of divorce and how I was able to turn that around and make it a more positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, being a child of divorce, what do you see today? Because you mentioned this earlier, that this is something that's affecting Christians, too. It's obviously, it's sad when I think about those statistics that say 50%. And I don't really know that. I don't know what churches they're looking at to get that number, but by and large, across the border, it doesn't seem to be a whole lot better among believers in terms of a divorce rate, 50%.
It's so sad. And honestly, I don't know if the rate was as bad in 96 when my parents divorced, but I think today, I talk a little bit about it in the book, these generations that just came up were taught some different ideas. You know, we grew up with the fairy tales. We grew up with everything is happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And there's no work to be done. So I think people just expect that I'm going to fall in love with someone. We're going to be best friends. We're going to get married. And, you know, maybe we'll have little arguments, but we're not going to have any hard things to really go through. And the moment that something gets hard, they walk away. Mm-hmm. And so what was important for me was to take what I went through as a child and maybe help other families, maybe teach other parents what not to do or what to do to not affect their child in the long run. One thing that was really important to me was that my children never looked at their father as anything other than what a father should be, their leader of their house, their Superman, their Mr. Fix-It, their, you know, someone who would always protect and love them. And when you go through divorce and you're a child of divorce, and especially at the age of 12, you kind of understand what's happening. And so it was hard for me to see my parents fighting. It was hard for me to see my mother put my father down or my father put my mother down. And, you know, they are amazing people now. And my testimony, which I don't know if you know, but in the book, they get remarried 5 years later.
No, I didn't.
Yes. And it's because of their faith. And so what was really weird for me to see was pre-divorce, the people that they were, then finding God, having a personal relationship with God, and then the people they are now in their relationship. And they are truly like this couple that, you know, they are leaders in their home, they're leaders at church, they're looked up to in many ways, but it's a safe, loving, compassionate, understanding, and graceful environment. So I think they gave each other grace, and that taught me about giving people grace in my own life.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about a relationship that was broken mm-hmm. and then repaired, there's something wonderful about that and hope-giving to just about anybody.
Mm-hmm. It was hard for a 12-year-old to understand, okay, first you're giving me this idea that you can break a family, that a family can be broken. So then when I was 17 and they decided to get remarried, I was like, I don't know, maybe not the best idea. But now looking back, you know, hindsight's 2020, seeing the difference in them and that they had to go through that hardship in order to become the people they are today, you know, I understand, and I gave them grace for what I went through. And I think that I had to give myself a little bit of grace too.
Mm-hmm. And that's a part that I believe that everyone has to do. We have to give room for God to move in people's lives. And it is a point of giving grace. It is a point of not only giving grace, but receiving grace. And I think that thing of giving yourself is probably a little harder than the former.
It was. It was really hard the whole time. When you're a child, you're looking for the reason that you're going through this, and you're wanting to place blame, and you're wanting to understand, and you just can't. Like, you can't understand as a child the intricacies of an adult relationship, and you can't understand. It almost seems selfish to you that mm-hmm. they're making this decision when you're involved. And so I had to give grace. There was no other option other than giving grace, other than a negative, you know, other than I needed to get through this positively. And so grace was the answer for me.
Hmm. Well, you've mentioned already just the discipline that it takes to write a book and all of that. Now getting it published in this day, it's a lot different than what authors experienced, let's say 20 years ago. How did you go about that?
So I had a friend who lives in New Jersey named Stacy Cohen, and she had actually gone through the process of sharing her story with Kate Butler Books. And Kate Butler is an incredible publisher out of up north. And after having her come speak to my Fellowship of Women Leaders group about her book and her story, she said to me, Sarah, I really think that you should tell your story. I really think that you should talk to Kate and see if it's something you're interested in. And I hesitated probably for a month or two. And then I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to do this. I'm just going to find out what it would take, how much time it would take, you know. And I already had a lot of it written out, actually, because I love writing, and I wanted to write a book someday, but it was just in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Kate made it really easy. I mean, she basically walked me through each step, and she handled a lot of it for
mm-hmm.
me.
And that had to be exciting to see your book actually be a book.
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting. So I was sent the cover, then the front and back cover, just last week. And the physical book isn't available till August 25th mm-hmm. on Amazon. But I'm excited for people to see it and read it, and nervous.
So people have been reading the manuscript so far then?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really exciting. The pre-sale book as it is. And that's really great. And, you know, you mentioned this group that mm-hmm. You lead. Tell us about that.
Sure. So during the pandemic, I just felt like there were a lot of women lost. Like, they were looking for something. They couldn't find a way to process everything that was going on, balance their home life with their work life, with their church life, with everything we're asked for as women. And so I decided, my mom came to me. She has been a stay-at-home mom for 35 years. And she said, I think I'm going to get into real estate. And I was like, oh, okay. How can I support you? And she's like, well, you're so involved in the community. Are there any groups for women like me who are, you know, just getting started, or, you know, have been a stay-at-home mom? And I was like, I don't know. You know, you're a leader in other capacities of your life, like church and home, but all these groups were executive women groups, or you had to fit into some puzzle piece. And so I said, well, if you can't find it, why don't we start it? So we started this organization, and I'm not kidding you, it was something women were looking for, because within the first week, we had over 100 members. Within the first month, we had over 700 members.
No way. 700 members.
We have 799 members now, just mostly locally in Central Florida. They're women who they don't have to be a working mom. They don't have to be a woman in an executive role. They don't even have to be a mother. They can be a leader in any capacity of their life, at church, at home, anywhere that they feel that they're called to be a leader in their faith. And so we started this organization, and we've only had a few meetings, and they were all, you know, people coming to speak to us via virtual because of COVID. But our first meeting, our real like in-person meeting, is in August.
So basically this organization, now almost 800 people, has yet to have a face-to-face meeting.
No face-to-face, a lot of FaceTime.
Yeah.
But no face-to-face.
FaceTime and Zoom calls have been the real answer for us all during these days, these weird days of pandemic. And boy, oh boy, I tell you, it's in the news a lot about all the kind of the strains of this COVID thing, kind of picking back up again, different strains. But I'm hoping we never get back to 2020 again and all of that stuff. So I'm ready for you guys to have that meeting. and you've got a new problem. You've got to find a venue for 800 people.
Oh my gosh. I actually put it out to the Facebook world. I said, do you know of a venue that would host all of these women for like a, maybe like a either a brunch or like a happy hour, anything. But it was hard because they don't want to have so many tickets for restaurants. You don't want to have so many open tickets. And I'm sure they'd love the business, especially after 2020. But it's hard to fit everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really exciting. And to see you receive the kind of, I would say, just acclaim and commendation in the public. The I4 Business Magazine named you the very first woman receipt of their Leader of the Year award in the field of business services. So God is blessing you, and I think it's important for you to just realize you're making a difference when you have people like the OBJ, this group right here, the I4 Business Group, and they're drawing attention to what you're doing. You're catching the eye of some people because you're doing a good thing. And I just want to say thank you for doing it.
Thank you. I mean, it truly is not just because we're financial advisors. Like, all of these awards, they have leaned heavily on the service part. So it's really how we're serving others. And I think that means so much more to us because we're giving back and people are recognizing that and hopefully inspiring other people to do the same thing. And I've always believed that when you give, God gives back to you tenfold. And I cannot tell you how many times in my life I've been like, oh gosh, I've been so busy giving to this nonprofit or organizing this gala that I don't think I have any new clients coming in this month. And what's my team going to do? And the next day someone calls and like, Sarah, I really need some help with my finances. And I'm like,
Yeah, that's what I do.
I do that. That's my main job. Let me help you.
That's hilarious.
So.
Oh, that's great. Sarah, give us your website so that people can get in touch with you.
Sure. So it's actually easy. www.sarahgrafton.com.
Well, that is easy. It's your name. Yes. Know her name and you've got her website. Sarah, thank you so very much for being with us here
today
on The Shepherd. It's really exciting to see a young lady, a mom, and these boys. I'm sure you're going to be schooling them yet on the basketball court out there. That's great. But it's really great to have you here, and we just wish you the best.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to be here. I'm so thankful for your team. And honestly, like you, there's no more important job than sharing God. So thank you for doing this.
You certainly are welcome. And friends, thanks for being with us yet one more time. We'll catch you next time on Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd.